Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance?
Real energy.
Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine rights researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com, click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other natural supplements to help you stay healthy naturally. We are here live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. And we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. Dr. Sherry is on sabbatical until later this month, but I promise we'll have no trouble filling the space with information, news, science, law, and so forth concerning the vaccine issue. The show's theme music is brought to you by yours truly, written and produced. And we welcome your calls during the live show. Area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen or call in to ask a question, make a comment. That number again is 646-478-0772. And if you do have a comment or question, push 1 on that keypad so it'll light up on the board here and we'll know that you're waiting to come on the show. We also welcome your emails during the week. attorney@vaccinerights.com, attorney@vaccinerights.com, and drtenpenny@gmail.com, drtenpenny@gmail.com. This is April 13th, 2015. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and welcome to the show this evening. Boy, there's just tons of things that have gone on recently, going on currently. Let's see how much that we can fit in the next better part of an hour here that we have. I wanted to jump right in to an article that I just saw quite recently, as in the last few minutes, to be perfectly clear about that. Australia denies benefits to parents who won't vaccinate. Australians who refuse to vaccinate their children will no longer receive child care subsidies and family tax benefits, Prime Minister Tony Abbott announced on Sunday. And I'm reading from an article that is at wakeupfromyourslumber.com. I love the name of that website, wakeupfromyourslumber.com. This widely anticipated government crackdown comes as Australia sees an increase in the number of so-called vaccine objectors. Now, I tell you, things here in the U.S. are crazy. And I'm keeping up much more here than with what's going on in the rest of the country. But we've got friends in Australia, and things in Australia are just nuts. I mean, they are so psychotically aggressive there in the pro-vaccine arena. I mean, they are here as well, but it's just amazing. I mean, once you figure out that you're being lied to, then you get on a trail, you start following the path down the rabbit hole, as the metaphor goes. And I tell you, I've been heading down that rabbit hole for years, and I still haven't found the end of it. I've come to the conclusion that there really probably is not an end to it, that there's always the next layer behind the last layer. But it is pretty intense down there, as it is in some areas here in the U.S., of course, as well. But I wanted to comment on something. Let me see if I can find the piece of the article here. The government on January 1st will remove a conscientious objection provision and permit exemptions only on strict medical or religious grounds. And people who cite religion would have to be affiliated with a religious group with a registered objection approved by the government. In other words, don't bother applying because none of you will qualify. That's how I read that. Very, very few exceptions are likely to be allowed. And I am not familiar with the law in Australia. But if that's legal for them to do there, then we should count our blessings here, because the government cannot lawfully add that kind of a restriction here. There are several bills, as I'm sure you know, in the country looking to restrict or eliminate non-medical exemptions, and Illinois' first try at that, and I believe New Mexico started with this as well, where they wanted to require membership in an organized religion. And here in the United States, it's unconstitutional, and they cannot lawfully do that. Now, there still are at least three or four states that have exemption laws on the books that do that. South Carolina, South Dakota, Kansas, I think, and one of the I states, Iowa, Idaho. I forget which one. I get those two confused. There are at least four states that I'm aware of that do that here. It's unconstitutional, but those kind of laws will stay on the books and be enforced unless and until somebody challenges it in court and gets a court to rule that it's unconstitutional or gets the legislatures there to fix it. Now, in South Carolina, some people went to the health department, and they got the health department, with an attorney, and got the health department to change the form. So their form now that you use for an exemption in South Carolina no longer asks what your religion is. So they fixed it at least at that level, but the statute on the books, still bad, still needs to be fixed. But with respect to current bills, New Mexico tabled theirs, and I haven't heard anything about it coming back yet. Illinois, I got word that they changed the wording. They took out the wording requiring either support from a member of the clergy or being a member of an organized religion. They now have something else that's unconstitutional, and that the West Coast states already have, and some other states are trying to do with current bills, which is the one version or another of you have to get a vaccine education. And I believe that violates our 14th Amendment due process rights. And if you have religious objections, it would additionally violate First Amendment free exercise of religion. I've got analyses, legal analyses, on my website for anyone who wants to go look at those, or if you've got that going on in your state and you want a legal argument to tell your legislators that they need to fix this because it's unconstitutional, go to my website and feel free to pull from there. Or if you want me to write a letter to your state representatives, just send me an email and let me know that. Vaccinerights.com, www.vaccinerights.com, and on the upper left is a text link to the Legislative Projects page. So go to the Legislative Projects page for more details on that. Well, I heard some really interesting news earlier today that I have already since heard later today is false or fake, and really had got our hopes up there for a bit. The announcement was that Dr. Tony Bark, who is an outspoken proponent of vaccine choice, was going to be debating Dr. Paul Offit this Wednesday morning on a Chicago AM radio station. I have since been informed that that was false, that there is no debate scheduled, it's not going to happen. So I guess I'm not 100% sure what the actual status is, but I think it's very unlikely that we're ever going to see a debate, an open public debate between experts. And the reason is really simple. The pro-vaccine people have the upper hand. They don't need to debate to gain any ground. And if they do debate, then they're going to lose. What's going to happen is the corruption is going to be exposed, and they don't have any reason to take that risk. So I was skeptical when I heard about it, but somebody sent me a web link, and there it was up on a web page. It looked pretty darn official. So it was this Wednesday morning, Chicago AM 560, and 8 o'clock Central Time, which would be 9 Eastern, 7 Mountain, 6 in the morning Pacific Time. So if anybody wants to tune in or see if they can find it online, let us know if it happens. But my understanding at this point is that the initial announcement was fake or fraudulent, not legitimate. And that seems far more likely to me than that they would ever conduct a debate. I know that Paul Offit has in the past refused to debate Mary Holland, who's a New York law professor who is incredibly well researched and knowledgeable about vaccine issues, scientific and legal. But of course, Paul Offit declined, saying, well, she's not a medical doctor. And that, of course, is absurd. It's as if, first of all, that the only aspects that exist in this issue are medical. I'm going to get into that in detail in just a couple of minutes here. Or that a law professor or lawyer, a legal expert, wouldn't have anything intelligent to say about the vaccine debate. I just have to laugh to keep from crying, I think, here, because it's really just so insane. Well, I have my own debate story from this past week, and I wanted to share that with you tonight. I was, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I guess, I was contacted by a radio station in Tampa, Florida, WMNF. Now, I've been in North Carolina for over 20 years. I lived in Virginia for a few years before that, but I grew up in Tampa. And what some people will refer to as their former life, but in this case, what I mean by that is earlier in this life, what feels like a former life from this point in time. I have a background as a professional musician, and I've played original music on WMNF many, many years ago, before I knew anything about the vaccine issue and had any thoughts about going to law school. So I was delighted to hear from WMNF and to have an opportunity to get on the debate. And they had gotten approval, did get approval, an agreement for someone on the other side. And this was a Dr. Annie Sparrow, who I had not heard of before this, but she's a pediatrician. She's actually Australian, but is an assistant professor of global health at Mount Sinai in New York. And she seems quite well qualified to debate the pro-vaccine side, and she agreed to debate. And I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks in advance, both of us agreed to debate. Well, we got up to the, and this was at a morning radio show, I believe 11 a.m. Eastern time. We got up to the late afternoon the day before, and Dr. Sparrow sends an email canceling. And I just have to laugh because, first of all, no pro-vaccine people will ever agree to debate in the first place. They have the upper hand on this issue. They've got the majority of people in their camp at this point. They have absolutely nothing to gain from a debate and everything to lose. They won't debate because they'll lose the debate. They will be discredited. They will be reprimanded, perhaps recipients of retaliation from their peers for even bothering to debate in the first place. It's just not going to happen, folks. Now, prove me wrong, because I would love to see it happen. But I wanted to give you the specific phrase that Dr. Sparrow said in her email to the host of the radio show at WMNF and respond to that for a few minutes for you. Now, this is all put together in an article. It's been submitted to Natural News, and hopefully they will be publishing that real soon if they haven't got it up already. But I've got a, what shall I call it, pre-publication version on my own website. So if you go to vaccinerights.com, there's a link there in the upper left. But Dr. Sparrow says, quote, he is not a doctor, is not a responsible participant in this incredibly important issue, and I prefer not to elevate him by giving him credence or legitimacy on air. That is unfair to the audience. I cannot participate in such a debate. Unquote. Well, what she's essentially saying there is that the only person she's willing to debate is somebody who already shares the same views as her. So she's, you know, saying I can't debate, period. You know, the point of a debate is you have somebody representing the other side. And most people in a debate, if they think the other person isn't qualified, they're all the more eager to debate because they can rip the person to shreds. So I was eager to debate because I know there is no debate for the pro-vaccine side. But I am really proud of Jennifer Sullivan, the host of this show, which is called The Fairness Doctrine. And apparently there had been a series of shows where she had invited people from different sides of issues to come on, and there are very strict time limits and requirements on the debate. Each side gets a 5-minute block of time to state their position and a 3-minute time to rebut, for a rebuttal to the other person's 5 minutes, and then the phone lines are open for calls. Well, I am really, really proud and want to express my gratitude to Ms. Sullivan, who is the host or hostess for the Fairness Doctrine radio show, because when she was put on the spot at the last minute, she did make a good faith attempt to find somebody to replace Dr. Sparrow, but of course that's going to be impossible. And the only reason she got Dr. Sparrow in the first place is because Dr. Sparrow missed the memo. She didn't realize, apparently, until somebody caught up with her and said, you can't debate, she didn't realize that they are not allowed to debate. People on the pro-vaccine side of the issue are not allowed to debate. And furthermore, they have to come up with a reason that makes it sound like the debate is inappropriate or whatever. So what they have said historically over time is words to the effect of, it doesn't matter who the debate opponent is. It can be a medical doctor, lawyer, whatever. They will always say words to the effect of, I'm not going to dignify the other side of this issue. A very handy cover-up for our excuse for avoiding the facts. And that's, of course, exactly what's going on here. I had the great pleasure and honor of being on the Gary Null show in New York City earlier today. We had a brief discussion about this. He has put out requests dozens of times with himself as a PhD researcher or on behalf of medical doctors to various people, and they've never accepted the invitation to debate. And they won't, again, for the simple reason that they have the upper hand, and the only thing they stand to gain by a debate is that they're going to lose. They know they're going to lose. There isn't, the information isn't there. The most distressing part about all this, of course, is that there are people who will deliberately facilitate and participate in corruption, in the suppression of scientific information, and so forth. So I'm going to, I want to tell you a little bit about the article here and my response. So on the one hand, Dr. Sparrow's disparaging comment to me, we really have to identify that for exactly what it is. This is just a classic information control technique. I didn't take that personally at all, because she would have said that no matter who was on the other side. This is her way of saying, oops, I screwed up. I wasn't supposed to accept a debate, and now I got to find the most graceful way I can to get out of it. And the way you get out of it is you cancel at the last minute so they can't find anybody to replace you, and can't, the debate can't go forward, and you don't risk, you know, you prevent the other side from getting important information out on the air. Well, hate to tell you, Dr. Sparrow, but we had the debate anyway. And host Jennifer Sullivan read an article from Dr. Sparrow about vaccines. So we know what her position is. We read the article, and she read an article written by Dorit, see if I can remember what her name is here, Reese, a California law professor who is an outspoken pro-vaccine advocate. And they got their side, and I gave my side, and we had the rebuttals. So the information got out there anyway, and if you want to see exactly what the information is, read the article. There will be links to a version of the five-minute piece that I made, and then all the reference citations. But I will tell you, and then there's a link to the audio of the debate. You can listen to the actual debate if you'd like. But I will tell you, as no surprise to listeners of this radio show, that the pro-vaccine articles throw out a bunch of fluff, broad, generalized assertions that are either misleading or incorrect, no references, no sites or sources. They're making this stuff up. And I'm sure that there are some people in the pro-vaccine arena who have just drank the Kool-Aid and they don't realize that what they're saying isn't true or is misleading or incomplete. And God bless them, because a lot of these people's hearts are in the right place. They're just brainwashed and haven't figured out what's going on yet. But many of these people know exactly what they're doing, and they're covering up a corrupt underlying industry, which is really sad. And one of the reasons they can get away with this so easily is because most of the rest of us would never do that. And we hear from time to time, oh, nobody would really do that. They wouldn't be licensing vaccines if they were injuring and killing people, or they wouldn't be manufacturing vaccines if they were injuring and killing people. Nobody would do that. No, 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 no. You wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't do it, but they do it all the time. But the next thing I really want to underscore here, that when Dr. Sparrow says, I'm not a doctor, well, I am a doctor, I'm a juris doctor, but of course she means medical doctor. And let's face it, the fundamental core issues in the vaccine controversy are medical. Are vaccines safe and are they effective? But one of the things that, frankly, medical doctors on both sides of the issue and the general public on both sides of the issue that most people fail to understand is how substantially this issue involves legal questions and legal issues. So we have this vaccine injury compensation program that pays out over the last 5 years more than $220 million a year on average to vaccine victims. And we have people not only from the FDA and CDC, but also the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, the National Vaccine Information Center, and other sources that estimate only 1 to 10% of the serious adverse events ever even get reported. So that 220 million could represent 2 billion or 20 billion or potentially more. So who knows what the real scope is? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. There's no objective data available anywhere, but we know it's massive. But these payouts come as a result of legal proceedings. And doctors may testify as expert witnesses, but these proceedings are managed by attorneys, and they're ruled on by what are called special masters, which are judges for these vaccine court cases. And the debate issue that we were scheduled to debate is, should vaccines be mandatory? That's a legal question. Who mandates vaccines? The government. Through statutes, through health department and Department of Education and other regulations, federal regulations, EEOC regulations, federal civil rights law. And how do you interpret these laws? And which laws or bills around the country are unconstitutional? These are all legal issues and legal questions that to fully understand and to discuss intelligently or in depth requires legal training and expertise. So folks, is it ultimately inherently a medical issue? Of course. Is it only a medical issue? Not at all. And I would argue, and I think with a compelling argument, that it's Dr. Sparrow who was not qualified to have the debate, because we were going to debate something that was fundamentally a legal question. Should vaccines be mandated? But at best, the controversy and our rights, who can say no to vaccines and when and how, what's the procedure, what qualifies, who qualifies, what beliefs qualify, it is substantially legal rights issues. So it's a mixture of medicine and law, and having an attorney debate a medical doctor would be a beautifully appropriate debate, or a law professor, as was the case with Professor Holland in New York. So, again, these people are just copping out because they don't want to have a debate in the first place. They can't afford a debate. So there are something on the order of about 140 attorneys around the country who handle vaccine injury and death cases, and a small core, probably 30, 40, 50 of them, who do it either full-time, that's all they do, or it's a major part of their practice. But there's only one attorney in the country whose practice is focused on vaccine exemptions and waivers, and that's me, and only one attorney who is writing legal analyses for bills all over the country and has been doing it for years and participating actively in legislative activism around the country. So I don't know who would be better qualified than me. And I say that I'm not smarter than anybody else. There are lots of attorneys out there that are brighter than me. There's just no one who's been focused on these issues for as long and as deep and extensively as I am. So I welcome the support of other attorneys whenever I can get it. And there are some great people out there doing work in this arena. So I'm certainly not alone, but I'm uniquely qualified to debate the issue. And let's face it, the serious part of this issue is not the law or the medicine. It's the politics. It's the lies. It's the suppression of information. And there is a growing list of uncredentialed people, at least people, when I say uncredentialed, I mean they're not, they don't have law degrees, they don't have medical degrees, they don't have PhDs, but there are people who are very well educated on this issue and could debate people like Annie Sparrow and Paul Offit with both hands tied behind their backs. And I would put some of these people up in front of these pro-vaccine doctors any day of the week, much as I would personally love to debate in some of these situations, some of these people in a truly fair and objective debate situation. I would rather see some of these well-informed parents, parents of autistic children or vaccine-damaged children who've gone out there and done their research. They are perhaps among the best qualified, some of them, because they've lived this issue in a way that many of the rest of us haven't. But the point is, again, you don't have to have credentials to be able to debate the issue here. You just have to have a reasonable level of intelligence and a level of commitment that you have learned about the issue. So the whole debate issue, it's not about who has a medical degree or not, because that's not what the real issues are here. The issues here are the corruption, and you don't have to have a degree to understand research and present that information. We got a caller on the line who's been very patiently awaiting. Please hang in there. We're going to go to break here. When we come back, we'll take that call. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on sabbatical until the end of the month. And yours truly, vaccine right attorney Alan Phillips, holding up the show. In the meantime, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes, folks, so don't go away. We'll be right back with you.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real energy. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alter Rush, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and we've got a caller on the line here, area code 469. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Catherine. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine. Got a question
Very
or comment
here,
for us?
I'm here with my 16-month-old daughter, and I already sent you the question by email. She was vaccinated with hepatitis B at birth in the hospital in Texas against the doctor's orders. The doctor's orders did not provide for a vaccination, and we as parents did not consent to it, but still a nurse or doctor on duty forbid it. I know that because it shows up in her vaccination record. Now, the question is, how can I most effectively aggressively because I'm upset about it, even though she's here happy and healthy. How can I most effectively teach that hospital a lesson that they don't do that mistake again?
Well, it's a really good question, and I want to clarify that I don't give legal advice over the air, so I want to talk about, I want to generalize your situation and talk about this kind of situation in general, because I hear about this from time to time where people have a child vaccinated without their permission, and I believe you said in your situation it was clear that somebody was doing this without permission. Because sometimes what happens is that people don't make a point of saying we're not doing this or we don't want to do this.
Well, I told everybody that got in my way.
Yes. And that seems clear. That seemed clear from you know the way you've described the story.
Yeah,
but I just wanted to make a distinction because if you're in a situation where the routine procedure is to vaccinate, and you don't tell them we don't want to vaccinate, then you're going to have a real hard time at that point, I would think, you know, making anything out of it. Well, there's a couple of different things that come to mind to me. First of all, every state has medical boards, nursing boards, and so forth. So I would be considering or thinking about writing a letter to the state medical board or state nursing board or both, depending on who's involved, a doctor, a nurse, or what have you, and it might be both. Because even if it was a nurse who gave the vaccine, if she's doing so under the supervision of a doctor, and you know, they're both responsible. So I would consider letting, you know, the appropriate boards know that this had occurred. I wouldn't be holding my breath expecting them to initiate any sort of formal disciplinary action. But if we don't speak up, you know, when these things happen, then we are implicitly condoning bad behavior, and they don't have, they need the feedback. So that's one thing you can do. I don't think anything will come of it, but maybe even if you did a CC with your written letter, CC to the hospital CEO, or let somebody there know, you know, that this is going on, because nobody's going to be happy that the complaint is made. Go ahead.
Yeah, also, I do think I might have the name of the doctor because we got a bill for it.
Okay.
So I can maybe CC the doctor itself, himself, so he realizes he made the mistake.
I think if you don't want to be welcome, if you don't mind not being welcome back in the hospital again, you might, and I don't know whether that would, you know, happen or not, but but I would, if I was going to do it, I think I'd just go to the top. I'd go to the state medical board. I'd write to the CEO of the hospital. I'd just go right to the top and let the CEO, you know, come down.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you just CC the doctor and if the state medical board says, okay, but we don't see a problem here, and then nothing happens and nobody really knows about it, if you want to change hospital policy, you got to go to the hospital policy makers. And so I would go I would consider writing, you know, CCing the CEO.
Yeah.
And the reason I say CC them is because if it goes to the medical board and the medical board says, well, we don't see a real problem here, they may not even notify the doctor at all. And, and that's the only reason I would CC if you want them to know. So those are things you can consider doing. Now, theoretically, there may be a violation of some rights here that would provide grounds for a lawsuit. You have, all parents have a 14th Amendment due process right to parent our children. And that includes the right to make medical decisions. And if somebody, for anyone to sort of intervene and step in and cross over those that constitutional boundary, there has to be some sort of a compelling reason. You know, the Child Protective Services, if they have reliable evidence, they can come take a child away to save the child's life or save the child from abuse. And as long as they have a hearing within a few days, they can remove that child without having a court order. And and they need to have that authority, because there are some situations where children need to be rescued. So, you know, but there has to be, the point is there has to be some kind of compelling reason to do so. And there's no compelling reason to give a hepatitis B vaccine, because children, at least most newborns that I've heard of, are not intravenous sexually promiscuous drug users. So, you know, there's just
plus,
not
I'm vaccinated
compelling...
myself, so it couldn't have, It couldn't have gotten it from me.
Yeah, if you were vaccinated or had been tested for hepatitis B, then it makes your case all the more solid.
Yeah.
Usually in lawsuits, there's got to be some quantifiable harm in order to get anything out of the lawsuit. You know, if you get if a car runs a red light and you get hit and you're in the hospital, they've got to pay your hospital bills, maybe pain and suffering or other things, you know, like that, for example. But sometimes with constitutional rights, there actually can be court awards for an abstract right. It's pretty unusual for that to happen in terms of the way the legal system works generally. But I've seen this with religious freedom, free exercise of religion, where parents in New York in a vaccine religious exemption case were awarded money damages because of violation of their First Amendment rights when the school improperly rejected the parents' religious exemption. And in that particular instance, the court said that the loss of First Amendment freedoms, even temporarily, constitutes irreparable harm. So when someone's vaccinated against in violation of a constitutional right, that's not a temporary loss. That's a permanent loss. You can't go back and undo the vaccine. So I've never heard of a case where somebody made the 14th Amendment due process parenting argument. So it would be interesting what a court would do with that. I think you in terms of your time and energy and so forth, you're probably I'm not sure. I mean, every case is different, and it might depend on the details. But in general, I would think probably these are not cases that most people are going to want to spend time and money on pursuing as a formal lawsuit, although they could. But it doesn't take but a few minutes to write to medical board or nursing board, whatever would be the case or appropriate. But give them any documentation you have. You know, if you have a copy of the medical record showing a vaccine was given, include that. I mean, be as clear and upfront and any evidence, documentation you have.
And a documentation that my doctor doesn't have that in her orders. She might not want to get involved, but she probably has a printout of what her orders are, right?
It should be, I would just get a copy of the medical record, and whatever's in there is probably what's going on or not going on. But, some aspects of this are going to be state law things that I couldn't advise, even if I, was sure I had all the details and knew the law and so forth, because I'm licensed in North Carolina. But the constitutional rights there are going to be the same for anybody anywhere in the country. So, well, I'm sorry to hear that happened. I'm glad that the baby seemed not to be suffering any adverse effects. You never really know, So, and I hope that, continues to be the case. And because, as I'm sure you know, others have not been nearly so lucky. And so
I got one
wish you all
question.
The best with that.
Is that okay?
Sure, go ahead.
If I want to exempt her from, the appropriate exemption form for her when I send her to school would be the exemption of vaccination for reasons of conscience, right? Because proving that she has medical reasons is very difficult and religious, so if I'm not affiliated with a church, then I would have to use reasons of conscience, right?
Well, a complete answer to that question would take about 3 hours. But there's two things you have to consider. One is that somebody emailed me and said there are more than 10 vaccine bills in Texas right now, and the law is potentially subject to change, and we just have to wait and see what the law is once it changes,
yeah.
if it changes. But it doesn't matter for religious exemptions. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not, it doesn't matter what church you belong to or even if you belong
yeah.
to one at all. You don't even have to believe
okay.
in God in the Judeo-Christian sense of the
yeah.
word God to qualify for religious exemption.
Yeah.
That's something that's determined by the Constitution, not by state laws.
Okay.
So as long as the state, once the state offers a religious exemption, the state has very little to say about what qualifies.
Okay.
But so you just have to see what is
one form religious and conscientious exemption. Yeah.
I mean, a lot more people can qualify for religious exemption than think they can, because people very reasonably but erroneously will say things like, "Well, I don't belong to a church, or my church isn't opposed to vaccines," but that's not how the law works. So. It does have to be a belief that's religious in nature, as the law defines that phrase, but it's much broader than what most people think of. So, and if you have a religious exemption, that exemption comes with constitutional protections that philosophical or personal belief exemption doesn't have. So I
okay.
always recommend people, I always recommend people consider doing a religious exemption,
okay.
even if they have the personal belief option. But the way that you do it, you just have to look. Every state has their own procedure. Some states have forms, some don't, and so forth.
Yeah.
So you just have to see what the procedure is and follow the procedure there.
Okay.
Does that help?
All right.
And
yes,
with medical exemptions,
you
almost – yeah, you're welcome. With medical exemptions, you almost always have to have a doctor's recommendation. I think there's almost always a form for that. And sometimes, even when a doctor makes the recommendation, the state has authority to disagree and reject it anyway. So
yeah.
Medical exemptions can be really hard to get.
Yeah.
And I hope you never have. I hope you never qualify for one, because that means
okay.
you have some serious medical condition that a doctor is willing to get behind, you know, and say, yes,
yeah.
this child shouldn't be vaccinated. Yeah. All right. Well, that was a timely question from the previous caller, because I had somebody asking about medical exemptions in an email, so I just wanted to elaborate on that a little bit. Let me see. Make sure I find the right side of the page here. Well, the starting place for medical exemptions, in fact, current vaccine policy and law throughout the country, all goes back to a U.S. Supreme Court case back in 1905, Jacobson v. Massachusetts. And essentially what the court said in that case is that states have authority under the state's police power, and this applies both the state level and local level, to mandate vaccines. And they can mandate vaccines for everyone unless somebody has a present medical condition that is what we, in today's terminology, we call a contraindication. And that means you've got some kind of present condition that means getting vaccinated poses a significant risk of harm or death from the vaccine. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1905 did not try to spell out what does or doesn't qualify, nor do I think they should have, because, in fact, nor do I think the courts really even should try to do that today beyond what pretty much is goes on here. I mean, every state has its own laws. The federal government doesn't have authority to mandate vaccines for state residents directly. So the vaccines that are required for school enrollment for state residents are all at the state law level. That's why every state has its own separate laws, and they're going to be different from state to state. But every state law and every state has to offer a medical exemption, and they all do, U.S. territories as well, and any time vaccines are required by federal law, there's always a medical exemption. In fact, at the federal level, there's always medical and religious. At the state level, there's always medical, almost always medical and religious, and then some 20 or so states representing over half the U.S. population, at least at the moment. This all depends on how things play out in California over the next few weeks. But at the moment, more than half of people in the country have access to philosophical or personal belief exemptions for school and daycare enrollment. But it's going to be up to each individual state to decide what qualifies getting back to medical exemptions, what qualifies for a medical exemption? So some states will have their own list of contraindications, and some states maybe will defer to the CDC's recommended contraindications, but the CDC is a federal indication, can't force that on anybody. They can only make a recommendation, and then the states can adopt it or incorporate it in some manner or degree or just make up their own list. I suspect the CDC has a pretty strong influence over what goes on at the state level, but it can vary from state to state. So there'll be this list of contraindications. If you have this condition or this situation or have had this kind of reaction, then you can be medically exempt to this vaccine for this long or what have you. The problem with medical exemptions from the perspective of someone wanting to avoid all vaccines indefinitely is that medical exemptions might only be for one vaccine or some vaccines, and they may be temporary. And you don't want to qualify for one because that means you really do have a serious condition. And another problem with medical exemptions is that even when you clearly do qualify, good luck finding a doctor who's going to back you up on that, because many doctors have – I've heard stories of doctors have said privately to the parent, yes, your child qualifies for a medical exemption, but I'm not going to recommend it, because they will be jumped on by their peers or by the profession. That we live in a world where doctors are not free to practice according to their genuine professional opinion when they are a doctor in good standing is just really absurd. It speaks volumes about the sorry state of the world today and the country we're in, and things aren't getting any better. They're actually moving in the wrong direction. But there's some other issues here with medical exemptions. So there's this list of contraindications, and the laws will usually have some sort of a catch-all provision that essentially says, or anything else the doctor feels should, you know, is a legitimate medical reason that this child should not be vaccinated. Now, as I keep saying, the laws are different in every state. In some states, when a doctor makes the recommendation, that's the end of the story. The doctor makes the recommendation, your child is exempt. Everybody gets on with their life. But in other states, that's not the case. And it just depends on how the laws are written. What did the legislature, when they put together the wording, what did they want? How did they want this all to work? So there are states where the doctor can make a recommendation, and somebody in the health department can say, well, we disagree. So we're not going to allow the exemption. Because let's face it, who knows more about your child than some bureaucrat sitting in the state capitol who's never ever seen your child? I mean, it's really that crazy. Now, I can understand a little bit here. They want to avoid exemptions where doctors are just writing it to make the parent happy or something like that. I don't know. I'm fighting really hard here. Is it possible that there are doctors who will make recommendations for medical exemptions when they're not indicated? Of course it's possible. Is it likely that that happens all the time and with great frequency? No, it's not. And if the state doesn't trust itself to license doctors in an appropriate way, you know, to only license those doctors who are credible, qualified people to be doctors, and in fact, we can go a step further. If the state has licensed the doctor is presumed to be competent. And his decisions or her decisions presumed to be medically appropriate. So to be second-guessing the doctor, now that I think about it, it almost seems to me like it may be violating some boundaries there. I don't know if it's constitutional or not. But certainly on the common sense level, it's a violation. It's a slap in the face. Yes, you can have a license. You've done everything it takes to practice medicine, but we're not going to take your word for it. We're going to second guess you. I mean, that's a pretty crappy thing to tell your doctors, frankly, you know, for the state to tell the doctors. But they want to make sure they maximize immunization rates, and so some of them include in their laws wording such that the doctor isn't the last say on the issue. What a shame, but that's what it is. So it just varies from state to state. There was a case in New York several years ago over a medical exemption, and the doctor made the recommendation, and the state rejected it. And so they went to court, and the case went up on appeal, And on appeal, the court was not deciding who was right scientifically. All the court was doing was looking at, did the state have a reasonable basis for their decision? And the state's position had to do with the fact that there wasn't any medical research, published research, saying that this particular condition would be risky with a vaccine. This goes back to the old idea that you can't put a stoplight up at the intersection until there's an accident and somebody dies. We are incredibly not proactive in this country and in our Western culture generally, I think. I mean, there's a lot of proactive people and proactive actions, but just on the whole, we are much more reactive than proactive. And this is particularly horrible when you're talking about the intersection where somebody may die in an automobile accident or a vaccine contraindication where a doctor, because of his or her medical expertise, is the one to make that decision, the one who's attending to that patient. Why in the world would anybody else have authority over that person? So they lost the case. And so the parents were left in a position. Well, I mean, do they just go ahead and vaccinate the kid and see if their child is the one that has a serious reaction that maybe somebody will write up, you know, in the medical literature so the next child doesn't have to get the vaccine who has that condition? Not my kid. I'd be in another state. You know, it really doesn't make any sense. And I'm not blaming the court here because the court, the appellate court, was doing what it had to do. The way the system was set up, the court's not making a medical decision. The court is looking at a legal standard. And as long as the state had a rational basis, doesn't matter whether it was ultimately right or not or whether somebody else disagrees, because that was the standard the court was dealing with. So I'm not sure the courts are as much to blame here as maybe the legislature who set up the laws the way they did. But in any event, the outcome seems crazy to me from a common sense parent point of view. Not going to happen with my kid. And I've been contacted by many, many people from California recently. Those people out there are terrified. And I don't blame them because the legislature is trying to take away all the non-medical exemptions. And I've heard people say, you know, if they actually do that, they're leaving the state. California is in for the shock of its life if they do actually pass this bill. Because the people who don't want to vaccinate their kids are not all just going to say, oh, darn it, we lost. Okay. Give us our vaccines. It's not going to happen. There are going to be thousands of people who pull out of the school system and start homeschooling or who pull out of the state altogether. They're going to lose millions of federal dollars that the states all get for education, but it's based on the number of students sitting in the classroom. And it's going to be a nightmare for the state if they actually see this through. So this is going to be very interesting. We're in a very interesting time here, where they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes all over the place and all over the state with these bills. There are literally, there's over 110 vaccine bills pending in 36 or more states right now, according to the NVIC advocacy portal, and they're the ones who are tracking all this, so they would know. Well, we've run out of time here, folks. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, sabbatical for a few weeks, and I'm your the other co-host and host for the next couple of weeks here, Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips here. We are rebroadcast on National News Radio every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destinies. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
for we must be the masters of our destinies. For we must be the masters of our destinies.